to Geopolitical Horizons, the podcast from thegeopolity.com. My name is Nizar Hussain, and I'm the managing editor at The Geopolity. We now have a new US president and administration. After a turbulent 4 years, already some semblance of normalization seems to have appeared in Washington, such as in the White House press briefings. But President Biden has his work cut out. Confidence in the US, its credibility and position in the world are at all-time lows. Many allies were burnt by President Trump, and President Biden will have his work cut out. Here to unravel all of this is The Geopolity's founder, Adnan Khan. Hi Adnan, how are you?
I'm okay, I'm not bad. Yourself?
Not too bad. Alright, okay, first question. The US election was one of the most divisive and divided in US history. Can you explain why the US was so polarized?
Okay, so, I mean, it's good to be here. I think it's our first podcast in 2021. So, you know, this is something everyone's really looking at. And I think there's a number of underlying trends that really came on the horizon that were developing over the last 10 years or so. Probably the most important thing here is a large segment of the US public feel they've been left behind by their politicians. And you can see this if you look at wealth inequality in America. Around 1% of the population own about 50% of the wealth. About 20% of Americans take the country's wealth. So many people have felt for a long time that politicians, the American system, it just doesn't represent them. So we're talking here, labor workers have lost their jobs, they've gone abroad, they've been automated. These people happen to be white. Many of them happen to also be supremacist as well. These were the people Trump reached out to. And if you remember Trump's electoral campaign back in 2016, it was all white America's been left behind. The politicians don't represent you anymore. I'm here to represent the Americans that have been left behind. And he called this that he promised to drain the swamp. That's what he actually termed it. And you find that Donald Trump consistently resorted to prejudices, conspiracies, and myths that many of these people actually believed in as well. You see, during Trump's term, he blamed the media for everything. He blamed the deep state, and he blamed other politicians for even trying to overthrow him on a number of occasions as well. So what Donald Trump did is he tapped into a sentiment that already existed. And fine, some of the sentiments many Americans have may be built upon myths, but the sentiment that the system doesn't work for them, that politicians refuse to recognize they even exist, that is a sentiment that's actually real in America. And that's why in America, people turn to someone from outside the political class. They turn to a reality TV star who's never been in political office before. So Donald Trump, now that he's no longer the president, he's been advocating that the election was stolen by Joe Biden. And 76 million people who voted for him still actually believe that as well. So the reason why American politics is polarized is built upon a feeling and a sentiment that the system and the politicians don't represent them anymore. And because the American political system is dominated by such mainstream politicians, this is why there's a feeling from amongst at least half the public that the system just doesn't represent them anymore. And that's why the politics stays really polarized.
But Adnan, what about Joe Biden? I mean, Donald Trump was a complete outsider and he'd never been in political office before. So what about Joe Biden? Because I believe he has been in politics for quite some time now.
So Joe Biden is probably the complete opposite to Donald Trump. He entered politics, he became a congressman back in 1972. So next year, he would have been in politics for 50 years. And so Joe Biden was one of the youngest congressmen at the time. He's now, I think, in the top five oldest congressmen in Congress. So he's been around for a very long time, very experienced, complete opposite to Donald Trump. During his career, he has been on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So this is the committee whose job is to manage America's foreign policy and hold all the different offices to account on this. And on two occasions, during George W. Bush when he was elected, and then from around 2005 until 2009, when he became vice president with Obama, he was the chairperson of this committee. So Joe Biden is a foreign policy expert. If there's anyone who, probably the only person that knew more than him, and was probably more experienced with John McCain from the Republican Party. So he's the complete opposite. As I mentioned, he was actually vice president for two terms under Obama. So in the last three terms, two of those terms, he was the number two in government. In fact, the way he was seen was Obama was this young politician who didn't really know about American policies. So they needed a steady hand. And that's where Joe Biden came into the equation. So Joe Biden is the complete opposite to Donald Trump. And for many Trump supporters, Biden's, you know, the worst nightmare they could have, because he's is as establishment as they come. He's been on a key committee for all of his life. He's been there for a long time. He's the oldest congressman. He's actually been vice president as well. So when his first term comes to an end, 75%, yeah, if you think about the last three terms, and if you include his two terms, if he wins them, he would only have been out of government for about one term. So yeah, he's the complete opposite, you know, very knowledgeable, expert on foreign policy. He knows the world leaders. He knows how they work. So in a way, for his supporters, he's the steady ship and the certainty that America needs that was absent during Trump's term. For Trump supporters, he's an establishment as they come. As far as they're concerned, he stole the election.
Okay, big question. So does the new president mean a new America?
So this is actually a very interesting topic, because all US presidents, when they come into office, they say that the past has been really bad and that they are going to change things now for America and bring a bright future for the country. And we've seen historically that vast majority of presidents change very little and really just continue with the policies that were already there. So George W. Bush, at the turn of the century, he came to office talking about America is no longer going to engage in nation building. And then he proceeded to invade two countries and try and build those nations. Obama came into office and he argued that he's going to reach out to the Muslim world. He's going to communicate America's message and he wants to fix relations with the Muslim world. His first speech, if I remember, was in Cairo. And then he proceeded to increase drone strikes in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Somalia. Donald Trump, he said, you know, America's foreign policy is broken and he's going to establish a foreign policy that actually benefits America. And people are still trying to count how much has his foreign policy really benefited America. So Joe Biden is saying that Trump was so bad and that what he's going to do is he's going to repair the problems created by the Trump era. So I think the important thing here is we do need to differentiate between US strategic direction, the US strategic position, and its foreign policy. Now, the US strategic position is it's a global empire. It wants to maintain its influence around the world, and it has a global presence. And this doesn't change. And this America's influentials have all bought into because it benefits them and they believe it benefits America as well. And these influentials, whether you want to call them the deep state or the establishment, they're going to be in power despite the election cycle that actually happens. Now, how this is achieved, this is in the hands of the president. So how much money should be dedicated to which priority, how much resources should be dedicated to which issue, this is in the hands of the president. So the president of America, in a way, decides how America's strategic direction is achieved. The American president doesn't decide the strategic direction for a number of reasons. Firstly, presidential terms are limited. You're only in there for 4 years, or 8 years if you do two terms. And technically, you have elections every 2 years in America for the two houses. So every 2 years, there's actually an election in America that you need to get re-elected for. So how much are you really going to be focused on long-term policy when you've got so many elections to prepare for? Secondly, the US president shares power with Congress, where although the US president can declare war, Congress has to authorize it and fund it as well. So the position of the American president is actually quite limited if you actually think about it. So Joe Biden now will inherit the Afghan war that he's a full president now. So three of his previous presidents have been unable to finish off the Afghan war. George W. Bush started it. Obama reduced troops, then increased them, then reduced them. Trump came in and said he's going to completely bring all the troops home and end it. And then he did a U-turn on that as well. So presidents in America, they actually inherit 90% of the issues they're going to have to deal with. And most of these they will pass on when their term actually finishes. So what you find is, despite talks about a new America, a lot of this talk is really for marketing purposes. It's for electoral campaigning purposes. Once you're in office, there's actually too many issues you have absolutely no control over. So really, the strategic direction of America is already determined. That will outlive the president. Where the president does have a say is what the priority should be and how much resources to actually use. So does the new president mean a new America? Very unlikely.
Wow. I mean, one of Biden's first acts as president was to reverse the Muslim ban. Is he a Muslim-friendly president?
So I think with this issue, you know, we've been here before. Obama reached out to the Muslim world. He gave his first speech to the Muslim world. And we all saw what actually happened. And I think with Biden, we've got to put something in perspective here regarding him. He was vice president when these drone strikes were going on. He was the head of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee when the Iraq-Afghan war started during the Bush era. So Biden isn't new to foreign policy. Biden has been on the top foreign policy organization or committee that they actually have. I think the other thing we've got to keep in mind is Trump, when he came up with his ban, what Trump did is in his electoral campaign in 2016, he touched on all the prejudices people have. So you find Mexicans were rapists, I'm going to build a wall, and we need to get our security under control, we're going to stop Muslims coming to this country from about 6-7 countries. And because this myth existed anyway, he just tapped into it to gain the support of his support base. Now, what Biden has done is, naturally, this policy, it helped Trump show up his support base, but it doesn't actually help Biden. So, in fact, the way Biden views it is this policy actually hurts America's global image. So this was a very easy policy for him just to completely end this. And we all know, and we've all known for a long time, that American white national-based terrorists are the biggest threat to security in America, not Muslims who come from abroad. In fact, even the Muslims who have engaged in terrorist attacks have been born and bred in America. So this was a very easy policy for Biden to actually reverse. And as I said, Obama is credited with drastically increasing America's drone program, and his vice president was Joe Biden. So definitely he's not Muslim friendly. What you find, this was a very easy policy for him to actually reverse, to differentiate himself with the Trump administration.
Okay. I mean, Adnan, Trump, when he was in power, he seemed quite anti-China. What about Biden? What's his stance on China?
So Biden has already made clear that his number one priority will be China. And he criticized Trump for some of his more unilateralist approach towards China. He believed it was not a good idea that he separated himself from his European
allies.
Can
you explain unilateral? What do you mean by that?
So unilateralism is America just leads from the front on its own. And how this is different is the Democratic Party has always been multilateralist. Their view is we take our allies with us to deal with global issues and to deal with issues that affect America. And by taking the whole world with you or your allies with you, you share the burden. Allow your allies to also partake in foreign policy issues. And the Democrats have always believed this is the best way to achieve America's global and strategic agenda. The Republican Party historically has been America's strong enough. America doesn't need allies. In fact, allies get in our way. International treaties get in our way. And America can stand alone and do things on its own because it's powerful enough. And their view has historically been that America needs to show power in order to achieve its goals. Now, although Trump wasn't a Republican until he stood for them, Trump actually did that with steroids, as we saw. So on the China thing, we saw Trump's policy prior to. So the China policy has really evolved in the last two decades in the 21st century. So when George W. Bush ran for office, it was his government that was saying that China used to be a partner, but now because of its development, China is potentially a competitor. But the Bush administration got really busy with the Iraq-Afghan wars. They couldn't really dedicate anything towards China. When Obama came in, He spoke about shifting 60% of America's aircraft carriers to Southeast Asia in order to contain China. When Trump came in, he took it a step further by starting the economic war. So he started putting tariffs and quotas on Chinese imports, and China did the same thing as well. And he gave them actually an 8-point plan that he said China has to agree to. And some of it was very unreasonable. He said China has to import more goods from America. He needs to sell fewer goods to America to shore up the budget deficit. And he really criticized China's use of intellectual property and how they were stealing American tech. Now, these issues, there were negotiations over. And what Trump did was he actually compromised a lot over these negotiations, to the point that when Trump has now left office, apart from putting some sanctions on China on all the core issues, he's actually not done anything about them. Now, because he was quite aggressive with China, it's going to be very difficult for Biden to reverse this or to step back from this. So what Biden has already said is he wants to engage his allies in order to deal with China. That was something Trump didn't do. So when Trump banned Huawei and their tech for 5G, the Europeans actually were going to take Chinese tech for this future infrastructure. But Biden threatened them with sanctions and things like that. Trump threatened them. So a lot of them then stepped back. So what Biden is saying now is let's work with our allies in order to contain China. Because the American strategy towards China is not going to work if America takes an aggressive position, but its own allies are reaching out to China and working with it. So what Biden has seen is America's agenda will be best served by bringing the allies on board and actually dealing with China. And obviously the underlying thing with China is China's a rising power. China believes that Southeast Asia is its own periphery, its own territory. And it believes that America shouldn't have any right in there, or America shouldn't be dictating the terms in that particular area. So obviously that poses a threat to America in one region. And that's the underlying battle. What we're seeing is the economic aspect of it. We're seeing the military aspect of it sometimes when America sends its ships to that particular area. And, you know, this is why China is the number one priority for, even if Biden wasn't elected, even if an outsider was elected as the US president, China will still be the number one policy, because that's the biggest threat to the US.
Okay. And Biden mentioned a number of times that he wished to revive the nuclear deal with Iran. Do you think this will be possible? How do you see the US Middle East policy playing out?
So Biden has mentioned this a few times, and his foreign policy team around him have said that they plan to revive the nuclear deal. Now, it's called the nuclear deal, but it's actually much more than that. In 2015, Obama struck this nuclear deal. And what this nuclear deal was is Iran would severely restrict, effectively give up making nuclear weapons, and there will be severe restrictions on uranium production. In return, America removes sanctions, which will give Iran access to international finance and the global economy.
But isn't it not just nuclear energy that Iran is producing?
So Iran stuck to all the terms of this treaty until Trump came in and ripped it all up. In fact, Iran even stuck to the treaty details, even though America had left the agreement. You're right, Iran... as far as Iran is concerned, it needs nuclear energy for electricity, has a growing population. And we know at times Iran has pursued a nuclear program. And for uranium that you use in nuclear weapons, you need to, it needs to be of a quality of over 90%. Iran has very rarely got to uranium enrichment of 50%. So even if Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, it is very, very far away. But 2015 showed us Iran was prepared to compromise its nuclear program, even if it was pursuing one, in order to get access to the global economy and international finance. So Trump never officially withdrew America. He just ripped up the agreement and said, we're not going to follow it anymore. So he didn't give notice to Iran, though somebody would argue he publicly said it so many times. There is a mechanism in the treaty. The way the treaty comes to an end, you withdraw, is when the other party hasn't stuck by it. Trump never argued Iran didn't stick by it. Trump argued that the nuclear deal is so narrow, it doesn't include Iran's ballistic missiles. It doesn't include Iran's support for militias and Hezbollah and other non-state actors in the region. So it's going to be very difficult for Trump, for Biden, to really go back on this. And the main reason really is not just what Trump's done. What Trump's also done is he set up a Sunni or an anti-Iran coalition, which includes Israel, it includes the UAE, it includes Saudi Arabia and some of the other Gulf countries. He's actually set up an alliance against Iran. Now, that is quite far down the road now. Now, for Trump to now reach out to Iran and say, let's have a nuclear deal, it's going to really cause a rupture in relations with these particular countries. So, yes, Biden has said, he's been saying it for a while in the electoral campaign, of reaching out to Iran and having a new nuclear deal, which is a bit more broader. But considering, you know, most of the region, they've set up a coalition now against them, it's probably going to be quite difficult for him to do it. And interestingly, just within 1 week of Biden taking office, his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, he's already saying that this isn't even number one priority. This is rolled down the road, even if we do it as well. So I think you're seeing there what was said during the electoral campaign can actually be very different to what's done once you get into office.
You know, earlier you said that Trump formed a Sunni coalition against Iran. But surely this is the same Sunni coalition who did nothing regarding the Sunnis in Syria when they were being massacred, essentially. So although these are governments ruling over majority Sunni populations, they've always been quite suppressive of Sunni Islamic politics, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when they call it, they call it a Sunni coalition to give it some grandeur. The reality here is it's the rulers in these countries who are entering into a coalition, not their people. And you're absolutely right. You know, these countries, you find if they were very pro-Sunni, they would intervene in every Sunni issue where Sunnis are being killed or where Sunnis have got issues. They don't. But what they do is they colour their policies with terms like Sunni and Shia in order to give it credibility. So, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, in practice, it's the rulers. I mean, countries like UAE, countries like Bahrain, they're worried about Iranian influence. So they're worried about their own thrones. They're worried about their own position. That's why they've entered into this coalition against Iran. It's not the people. There's no referendum on this. People are trying to make ends meet and just live their normal lives. It's actually the rulers who are actually worried. And probably the main country that's really worried is actually Israel. And Israel knows they can't take on Iran on its own. Despite all the talk about war, it's going to have to build a coalition if there ever is a war. There's already a shadow war going on between Iran and Israel. You know, they don't engage directly face to face because of the resources it will take. So they engage in assassinations. They engage in supporting proxy groups. And now Saudi and the Gulf countries have come in on the side of Israel against Iran. So, you know, this is going to cause instability going forward. But as I said previously, you know, the strategic direction of America is to dominate its region and use a balance of power strategy, which is to ensure no one country dominates that region. So, you know, as long as there's Iran, as long as there's opposition to Iran, as long as no one of these countries comes to dominate the region, this suits America's agenda.
Okay, so the balance of power is essentially keep them sort of divided and exhausted against each other, right? Because even with Libya, the UAE, which is supposed to be part of a Sunni coalition against Iran, they were very active against the Sunni groups in Libya. So there's, as far as supporting the sort of Sunni coalition, it serves the purpose of weakening Iran, but they don't push for support of Sunnis insofar as to gain power. So it's kind of they're on and off. They don't have conviction in following that Sunni coalition as such. But sort of just to move on, so what's Biden's position regarding America's relationship with Europe? Because that relationship suffered under Trump.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump seems to treat his allies worse than he does his enemies. I mean, he rolled out the red carpet for Putin, for the North Korean leader, but his relationship with Merkel, with successive leaders in the UK, Boris Johnson and Theresa May before him. And I mean, he had complete contempt for Macron. He just saw him as some young cowboy and he would make this very public. So transatlantic relations, which is a key relationship for America in maintaining this Western dominance of the world, took a really, really big hit under Trump. And the reason why it took a hit was Trump's philosophy was, is there's too many freeloaders as far as America is concerned. His view is we've got allies who we provide security, who we provide military equipment, who we support. But what does America get out of it? These guys are free riders. So he was very open about this. I mean, Merkel, a number of phone calls between him and Merkel when they were released, it was actually quite shocking. I mean, it was to the point of bullying her and actually insulting her. That's how he actually treated her. So Biden has already said, you know, one of the first priorities he's got is he wants to mend transatlantic relations. And this is an important relationship. If America wants to deal with China, it needs to have Europe on its side. If it wants to share the burden, if it wants to really put pressure on China, having Europe on your side would actually help that. Because in fact, what China's actually been doing is China has been reaching out to Europe, has been offering them its 5G tech, its infrastructure, much cheaper than anybody else would. And many European countries even considered it. So for Biden, mending relations will be very important. And I think one of the first countries you'll probably visit will probably be a European country. He will probably come here to agree some sort of trade deal with Britain. And he will probably go to Paris and go to Berlin. Probably the only challenge you've got is Merkel's bowing out of politics. Macron's quite young and he's not been in politics for very long as well. So you may have a bit of a problem in terms of where the leadership is in Europe. But the Biden has already said the transatlantic relationship is going to be one of his most important priorities. And it makes sense. You know, if you want to deal with Russia, if you want to deal with China, you need to have Europe on your side. So I suspect some probably defense deals will be made. They'll reach out to Europe as a Democrat. And the Democrats usually have done that. The Democrats have historically been very much more multilateral in their approach. They'll engage Europe. They'll give them a stake in U.S. global foreign policy, which is usually how they've managed to get Europe on their side, which would obviously be the complete opposite to the approach Donald Trump took.
But by default, right, Europe and the US, they share more of a liberal culture. They share more of a ideologically historical roots, all of this. So by default, they'll always be on the same side anyway, irrespective of what China offers financially or what Russia offers financially. Isn't that not the case?
So this is... what you find is despite they may culturally be on the same side, even on values, but you find their interests actually collide quite regularly. So it is actually in Europe's interest to allow China, make a deal with China to provide them with future tech. They're doing it the cheapest. Their technology is good. But obviously that would strengthen China's position globally, which is the last thing America wants. Now, America's not offering that tech to Europe. It's not offered an alternative. It's just saying, you, like Trump did, you can't do that or they're going to put sanctions on you. And that just further erodes the opinion Europeans have about America. Now, American-European interests are not necessarily the same. There's a lot of overlap in some areas. But you find across the world, in Libya, for example, America and Europe are not on the same side. In fact, in most of Africa, you find Europe and America are not actually on the same side. They back different factions. They back different rulers. In fact, just last year, an American-backed captain did a coup in Mali, and he overthrew the political leadership that was very close to the French. So you find in many parts of the world, these are countries that are not on the same side. As far as America's concerned, you've got this massive country called Russia, who is always looking to expand further into Europe. So as far as America's concerned, it needs to be involved in Europe to make sure Europe's not taken over by any power. If any one power takes over Europe, it then poses a direct threat to America. So we saw America's intervention in both world wars because one country tried to become the power in Europe. And this strategic position still continues. Now, that doesn't mean, despite this strategic position, they can't agree on certain things around the world. They can. They've done that in different places. But you find, despite them culturally being similar, despite them having the same values, from an interest perspective, there are many, many areas where they are not even on the same side.
Okay. Do you think Biden has a sort of a values-based approach to foreign policy, or is he just more of a pragmatic person?
So this really brings us to the age-old debate, really, between idealism and realism, yeah, or pragmatism. And you've seen this in America. We've seen historically where leaders have said, we need to support democracies. We need to be against dictators and authoritarianism. We need to support human rights. And we need to take a stand. But we've seen during Trump and even before him, you know, some of the, one of the closest relationships they have in the Middle East, America, is Saudi Arabia, which is a monarchy who regularly suppresses dissent in their own country. In Egypt, you know, Trump openly said, you know, where's my favorite dictator? So you find on many occasions, pragmatism trumps idealism. And that's because, you know, the interests, America will not compromise its interests for its values. And in fact, values for a long time have been a convenient cover or convenient color to disguise what the real interests actually are. Now, definitely, I would say the Democrats are more ideologically driven than the Republicans. So the Democrats historically, you know, talk about liberal order around the world. They talk about human rights. And to some degree, they even engage in that activity. The Republican Party, you know, a lot of the time is about national interests, economic interests, getting the best oil deal, supporting a country that supports American foreign policy. So there is a backdrop for that. But the biggest problem Biden faces, even if he is going to be values driven, is that in the 21st century, America has trampled over more or less every value it believed in. We saw in Iraq and Afghanistan what human rights meant. You know, Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo Bay. We've seen at home in America what rule of law really means. America having one of the best healthcare systems in the world. We saw what that really means with this pandemic. The last 4 years, we saw what American global leadership means when America washes its hands. We saw the murder, assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, and Trump openly saying, well, Saudi Arabia buys arms from us, so we're not going to do anything. So the problem he's going to have, Joe Biden, is if you're going to advocate values to the world, well, the world is going to say to him, you don't abide by these in the first place. In fact, you've trampled over them in the recent history. And then the last point, and probably the most important to add to this, is America's image around the world on how it deals with its own people is at rock bottom. We saw it with the BLM movement. We saw how Trump treated his own people. So how Biden is going to be able to advocate values when the whole world can see what these values really mean and how America doesn't even abide by them. And in fact, America isn't even seen as a global leader when it comes to values anymore. Joe Biden will really have his work cut out if he goes down the pragmatic route.
Okay. Thanks for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues raised today, please check out our website at www.thegeopolity.com, all one word. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website, where you'll find comprehensive insights. I'm Nizar Hussain. Thanks for listening.